Hey, I'm Craig Stokes, owner of Chick-fil-A, Topanga, and Roscoe here in Los Angeles, California.
Hey, it's Kellen, and today on Diversified Game, you guys are in for a treat. And I do mean a treat, because if you go to the right restaurant, the right Chick-fil-A, you can say, hey, I saw you on the interview, and I learned so much, and maybe you'll get like a free napkin, because I don't want y'all going in there thinking you can get anything for free. It is hard to do business and there are no more hookup prices, but pay the full price because Chick-fil-A is definitely worth that. But the owner today, he doesn't just own a Chick-fil-A. I caught his attention. He had a picture of him when he was 16 years old, making about $4.75. He was rich. Ooh, man. And then he highlighted how he went to an HBCU. His wife went to an HBCU. So, of course, that resonated like with me and my wife and my story. And I said, I love the hustle. I love that he documented the journey, because no one gave it to him, I can guarantee. But Craig Stokes, actor, business owner, producer, welcome to Diversified Game. How are you doing?
I'm great, brother. How are you, man? Thank you for having me.
Oh, blessed by the best over here. And thank you for being willing to share the game. And, you know, I was just applauding when I saw that picture, and it just made me light up, because could you imagine at 16, when we all had these jobs that, you know, we had enough money maybe to go out, but could you imagine where you would have blossomed to? Like, look at the hindsight, give us the game on how you see the journey for yourself.
No, I would be lying if I told you I knew for sure. I'm walking into this interview at KFC and this is just the start, because I'm going to own one of these or a Chick-fil-A. No, I didn't have that foresight at all. But I will tell you that I did take that interview seriously. I definitely took advantage of that opportunity. I walked into that interview with a suit for a fast food restaurant. I definitely didn't just, brush it off like, this is $4.75. I'm not going to give my best. And got the job, was super excited, and gave it my best to the point where my parents would come up there, and that's how I even got that photo. My dad was so proud of me, came up and took that photo of me. And I mean, who knew, right? Like, who knew, fast forward 20 plus years later, I could put that photo side by side with me now, having my own franchise.
I'm not trying to be funny, I'm not trying to talk bad about anybody, but it could have really happened that you could have still been at KFC. We see people working at fast food. It's a career. And again, to me, if that's your career, I'm not talking bad about it, but I think that sometimes fast food is that beginning job. And then you can blossom and see what you want. You can see how things are run. Some people get caught up, though, because it's the drug. Sometimes it's the kids and the different decisions where it's like 20 years and I'm still making $4.75. So I think that we have to put that out there, because this did not have to happen. Just because you went to school doesn't mean that you are this successful or successful at all. You know, plenty of people who are still trying to pay Sally Mae back.
Yeah. Yeah. And we're all in that same boat. I mean, there's always different levels of man, I feel like I'm still under a little bit of pressure. I'm still under the having to pay, school loans back or whatever it might be. There's always something. And I think the higher that you ascend, that pressure could feel that much greater. But you're right. I think we all can get stuck, whether it's fast food, whether it's just stuck in a hometown, whatever it is, maybe whatever that thing is, you're afraid to take that leap of faith, whether it is, or maybe it's just something that you love to do, right? I just think that sometimes we don't have the vision. I didn't have the vision at that age. I didn't know that, man, while I'm here, maybe I should learn how to do schedules. Maybe I should learn how to order the inventory. Maybe I should ask, can I run an entire shift? I had no idea to ask those questions. Sometimes I really just don't fault people, because we just don't know what to ask. We don't know who to ask. We don't know what's possible. We don't know if we should just stay in our lane and then wait for somebody to come and say, hey man, do you want to learn this? Do you want to do this? I think you might be a leader. And a lot of times we do wait for that validation from somebody else instead of kind of knocking down the door and creating our own opportunities. We tend to just wait for opportunities. And so I would say that that's probably the greatest culprit, is waiting for something to happen, or not having enough mentors, enough people that we've seen come before us. Oh, wow, if they can do it, maybe I can do that. Okay, I don't know all the steps they took, but I can at least take the first step. You see what I mean? And I think for me, the greatest thing for me was just having parents that had worked at Burger King, worked at McDonald's, worked at KFC, and then they did something else afterwards. So I knew that there was more to that beyond KFC.
And so it sounds like the difference is you being so inquisitive, nosy, prognosious, and saying, I want to learn more. And that makes a great team member more than an employee, because I don't hire any employees. You can be a team member. And you know, I got that from Dave Ramsey. I didn't make that up, y'all. I got to give credit, you know, where credit is due. But, you know, because team members really can act like they're part of the business, where employees come late, leave early, and steal while they're there. And so, you know, you wanting to do more and be an asset and a value. And that came from, you say, the parents, but what about, you know, the I think I could own one of these. Like, when did that hit? Was that 15 years later? Was that, you know, in 5 minutes, you're like, I could own one of these.
No, it's a really great question. I think, I never thought that at that age. That's just because I hadn't been exposed to all the areas of the business. I knew I was confident in that I was great with people. I knew that people responded well to me. And I got that validation based on being at the register at KFC and, hi, welcome to KFC. And just great, giving a great experience, to the point where I would get tips at KFC. I would get $5 tips. And you're talking about 1996, right? And so $5 tip from somebody's pocket at a fast food restaurant above and beyond the price of their meal. I'm like, what did I do? Somebody from Domino's Pizza, I remember, came in one time and they were ordering KFC on their lunch break. And they're like, man, it's been a pleasure being served by you. Here's a free pizza. And I would just start getting these bits of validation where I wasn't even trying to do anything above and beyond. I just was being me. We got a secret shopper. For those that don't know, somebody comes by, poses as just a regular shopper. And in reality, they're taking notes and they're evaluating your performance. And I ended up getting the highest score that in hospitality that the restaurant had ever received. And I got the biggest raise that you could ever imagine. I went from 475 to 485. So a big 10 cent raise. And I was balling out of control. You know, I didn't know what to do with myself. And, but what I realized was that's three things that I've done or that I've experienced that say I'm good with people. The rest of it, I didn't know, you know, I had no idea. So I carried that. I know I connect well with people. People see me as, you know, a good person, great personality. And that was really more the through line through anything. And I think connecting well with people, seeing people as people, not about your position, not about your title, just as a person, that was the thing I think that allowed me to start being put in spaces and having opportunities come my way that allowed me to start seeing what my potential was outside of just being a good person. But I will say, backing up a little bit, I've always had the entrepreneurial spirit, man. So whether it was, oh, the school bus is about to come, let me run down to the gas station real quick, get a pack of Nihilators, open them up and sell them individually for 10 cents each and make some extra money to buy extra juice or something at lunch, you know, or cutting grass or cutting. I started learning how to cut hair at age 13. And my mom and dad had a children's birthday party business. So, you know, yours truly, I'm not a big guy now. So at age 13, you can only imagine what I looked like dressing up in red spandex, getting hired to do kicks and punches as the Red Power Ranger. So I would go from age 13 to 16 before I got the KFC job. And I'm, you know, we're charging about $100 an hour. I'd bring cake, balloons, pizza. I'm doing kicks and punches, having a great time entertaining these kids for their once in a lifetime birthday, whatever age they were turning. And I would do daycares, festivals, birthday parties. And so I went into this idea again that I had a great personality, could connect with people of all ages. And, you know, I had the foundation of entrepreneurship from my family and just my own, like you said, being inquisitive and, oh, their grass is high. I got a lawnmower. Let me cut the grass. You know, my hair is long. I want this style. We don't have a lot of money. Let me learn how to cut hair. You know, it's that kind of a thing. So I think having that sense of necessity, sense of urgency, curiosity, a foundation with parents who say, you see something you want, go get it. And I think that was really the foundation. It wasn't so much Chick-fil-A or a franchise. It was just keep doing what you're doing. It's working, man. Keep doing what you're doing.
No, I love that. And I love that, you know, you said what you were selling, because somebody would have heard that he was selling that candy. He was buying it, you know, bulk and breaking it down.
Yep. Selling it low, you know, selling the highest quality for the lowest price, you know, but.
Yeah. And you were, you just found the right product, the right legal product. So everybody who's listening and you think that you're caught in a lifestyle, you just transfer your product and your skills, and you could also, you know, get to a level and do more. But also, you know, you also are military trained as well. Right. And I want to talk about that, because I know when you were at KFC at 16, getting those awards, people were probably, you know, making fun of you. Oh man, yeah, the puppet, the square, you know, everything, you know, you as the Power Ranger, oh man, you wearing tights. But then when you go into the military, you get some of that same stuff because you were an officer. And you get some of that same stuff. The same thing in school. Oh, the teacher's pet. Mm-hmm. Like when you are a likable person, it's not like everyone's patting you on the back. You're having to take the bumps and the bruises and like, man, I know you know how to fight without even, you know, asking you, because you've had to fight from each direction, you know. So can you talk about that and just how you dealt with that? Because some people, they want to be bad because they get applauded and they get more attention being bad, being negative.
Yeah, no, you know, I'll take you back to fourth grade. You know, I spent a lot of time trying to be like a guy, one of my good friends. I still stay in touch with him every now and then to this day. But I would literally say, hey man, I know you wear reading glasses. Can you bring a extra pair of reading glasses so I can wear them? We would make a beat together and I would do the exact same beat. We would draw a picture and I would copy his photo. And so it was one day we were standing next to each other and a girl came up and it was like, man, Craig does everything you do. And I'm thinking like, all right, take care of me, best friend, you know, have my back. Go ahead, shut this down real quick. And he was like, man, you're right. I bet you if I jumped off a bridge, Craig would do the same thing. And so it was at that moment, that was my light bulb moment. Fourth grade, little old me, getting snapped back to reality. Like, why am I spending so much time trying to be like this guy? Like, I'm as cool, if not cooler, than he is. I can draw, dress as well, if not better. I have my own sense of style and I can see just fine. So why am I trying to wear reading glasses when I'm fine? Like, I'm good. My vision is good. And it was really at that moment that I said I was going to be me regardless, no matter what the situation was, what the circumstance was. And so I never had to deal with like the bullying or having to wonder which side I fit in. I was just, I think it was my mother, her background as a social worker. My dad was in law enforcement and was a lawyer. So I was around people who didn't have anything. And we didn't have a lot for a long period of time. We would shop by getting donations from social services and we'd go through the bags of clothes and that was how we would shop. Or I would spend time with my mom's clients and get to know them and understand kind of their plight. And so, but I was also really cool with the guys on the street, you know, the street corner. So I was able to run the gamut in terms of who I can relate to, who I can connect to. And that was really my goal. And that still is my goal. So I want to walk into any room and be good in any room. I want to communicate and connect with anybody at any level. And so I think that skill has allowed me to navigate the world in a way where I haven't had to deal with anybody coming at me sideways for me being me. And so even in high school, I got voted most likely to succeed, best personality, friendly, you know, most friendly. And so I realized I'm me being me is working. I'm good this way. And so I didn't even, whether it was military, whether it was entertainment, whether it was being a Power Ranger, I think what people saw was a guy that was confident, a guy that was doing more at my age than most people were doing. So I ended up being more like a role model, I think, than just being like the clown on the street. Like, who is this guy? You know what I mean? Like, it was, I'm thankful that I was spared that, that part of life, because I know a lot of people go through that and they're wondering like, what side of myself should I show? Because I'm tired of, because being me doesn't seem to be working. Like, I hear what Craig is saying, but being me doesn't seem to be working. Like, I'm going to school trying to be myself and I'm getting picked at, I'm getting isolated, I'm getting singled out. I don't want to go to school. I need to transfer to another school, whatever it might be, or I become somebody I'm not just so I can fit in. And I empathize, I sympathize. I'm thankful that wasn't my experience, but I can only imagine how hard it is and how much people miss their calling and who they're supposed to be because they don't fit in the moment. What I will say though, is my mother told me never to put all my eggs in one basket. She said, Craig, you want to do this? Do it. You want to do that? Do that. Expose yourself to all these things. And again, I think just to kind of tie it up, that's what made me fit in most, if not all circles, was my exposure to a lot of different things at a young age.
And your exposure, you know, I've named some of your titles, yeah, but in the Air Force, when I was looking at the LinkedIn, it said flight commander. So mm-hmm. Are you also a pilot?
No. So flight commander is just, it's kind of where you start as an officer. You start at the flight level and then you might go into like a section or a squadron commander, and you just move up. You have more people that serve with and underneath you. And so at a flight, you might have 8 to 12 people, something like that. And then a squadron, I mean, it could be really, really big in terms of 100 plus people. And then you go to a group, which is several squadrons, you know, under one group. And then you have the wing, which is the entire base. So flight commander, no, it doesn't mean I'm a pilot. I wish one day I'm you're going to see me flying in friendly skies. So just hang on tight. But
okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause I mean, I was like, how talented is this guy? And and so, you know, he must be Jamaican with all these skills.
Man. Right.
But you've had, you know, different jobs and experiences. So nothing ever just stopped.
Right.
Can you talk about which one, you know, was it doing the operations for the Air Force? Or what was it that made you say, you know what, I know I can handle the logistics of this Chick-fil-A?
It was, so I would say that I lived three parallel lives. So I went to college and was studying engineering. And so, you know, I was doing something that was challenging, but also something that I loved and was good at. But while I was in college, I was also in ROTC and I was doing, training and studying to be an officer. But I have a clothing line while I'm in business while I'm in school called Cool Classics. So I was designing my own clothing line while I was there. And so I was really involved there. I had created a student organization that also was giving back to schools and lunch buddy programs and scholarships for a friend of mine that passed away while we were about 20 years old. I was Mr. A&T when I was 20 years old. So I was about a sophomore and I was the male representative of the university. So there were things where I'm doing creative things. I'm running organizations. I'm representing the university. I'm in ROTC and I'm also kind of on the analytical side with engineering. So I'm leading three parallel lives. And so then while I'm in college, I also do my first feature film. So that's when I really started getting into acting. And so when I graduated, I was like, man, I don't know if I want to do Air Force. How can I make this work? Cause I'm bitten by the acting bug now. I really want to do this and I want to run businesses. And so I was able to go into the Air Force Reserves full-time and pay back my ROTC scholarship. So that allowed me to do the Air Force, go to grad school to get my MBA, still run businesses and still act. And so that's how I was able to do that. And I kind of led those lives, business, entertainment, and the Air Force until Chick-fil-A. And so part of business, one of my friends from high school started a business much like Sodexo or Aramark, or if you've ever been to a college campus and somebody's running the food program for the college, the person that's the reason that you're able to eat meals on campus, there's a company that runs that program. And so a friend of mine from high school has the same kind of company. He is now the CEO of and owner of Fuddruckers. So he's gone on to do really great things. So that's Nicholas Perkins. What's up, Nick? Anyway, he was like, hey, man, I want you to come work with me. I think you'll be an asset to be, you know, to run the marketing for my company. And it was in 2012 that we actually had a meeting with Chick-fil-A to put a Chick-fil-A on one of his college campuses. And at that time, I'm like, I grew up in North Carolina around Chick-fil-A's. I had no idea they even did this kind of thing. So I would say that was where the seed was planted, that it was possible with Chick-fil-A. Up until this point, of course, I'm running businesses, I'm on stages, speaking around the country, doing a lot of great things to where I'm starting to get confident that, hey, I can lead organizations, I can lead people, I can make a difference. I can bring my creativity to it. And now Chick-fil-A does this thing. Okay. Fast forward to 2017. I'm in Italy on assignment with the Air Force in my hotel room at the time. And that is where I actually click send or enter on sending my application for Chick-fil-A to be considered to be, an owner operator. About 18 months later is when I got selected in January 2019. So I would say it was just a combination of being able to live those three parallel lives and to tap into things that I liked and what I enjoyed, and just got refined along the way. Planted the seed in 2012, click send on the application in 2017, and here we are.
What a story. I mean, and what a book, or a book to come,
yes,
book turned movie, because that is, I mean, to see how every step of the way, because, you know, people will look at you and they'll say, must be nice. And we know that's the hater call,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
must be nice to do all that. And but you don't understand the steps, and that, you know, Rome wasn't built in a day, wasn't built by one person. And
right.
Then you put in the fact that with all this nonsense, you don't have to go down this road with me, but I'm gonna go there. With all this nonsense of everybody now who's making six figures thinking they're a high value man. Mm-hmm. And I know the man who made this go viral, famous, you know, I know a lot of influencers because that's what I do, but, and I work with a lot of them, but that you're doing all this, but you have your wife.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have your children. Can mm-hmm. you talk about that? Because we got a lot of bachelors out there saying, well, I made the money. Now I'm waiting for somebody to bow to me and kiss my feet and,
yeah.
you know, raise my children every time I want to pop them out. Like, that's ever how it's gone down
mm-hmm.
in a good, healthy relationship. So
right.
can you talk about, you know, adding the wife component, who also, I believe, is an HBCU graduate. So,
oh, 100%. You know. Yeah. Aggie Pride all day. So, back to the three parallel lives, me being able to go into the Air Force Reserves allowed me to not only go to grad school full time, but allowed me to get married. I got married at 24, so married pretty young. She was 22 at the time, so definitely got started much younger than I would probably recommend. But it's a blessing when you know that you're with the right person, and timing could be off a little bit, or you might be a little young and not have all the life experiences, but half the battle, if not more than half, is marrying the right person. And so she has always been the person that has believed in me and guided me and said, hey, I got your back. You know, I don't necessarily want to be out front. You go do that. You know, you're the face. I got you. I got your back. I got your support. And so we've been rocking out like that since then. And really even before we got married. And so she knew my dreams, she knew my visions about what I believe was possible for my life. And just been by my side every since. And I think the perspective that I'm thankful that I have is that she, even though she has my back, she doesn't walk behind me. She walks beside me, and it truly is a partnership. You know, I have her back just as much as she has mine. And so without her though, I wouldn't be here. So I definitely will, I need to tip my hat to her. We have two beautiful kids, you know, 12 and age 4. So a little bit of a gap there, but it actually works well because we were able to devote our time to our daughter, our oldest child for 8 years, just her as a single child, before we introduced our brother to the mix. So it allowed us to still maneuver and move through the world, move and shake and kind of do some things without being too stressed, right? 2, 3, 4, 5 kids at the same time. It's hard. It really does put a lot on a family, on a person. And you still have this dream, but now you got to feed the dreams of your kids, your family. You got a lot going on. And so we were able to do it the way we did it. And but I would not be able to be here without her. So.
And you did it, you know, as a family, because some of y'all got families all across the town like grandpa had. And you say, well, why isn't it together? You got to pay child support here, child support mm-hmm. there. Mm-hmm. I say that because you are the model. And I say you are the model in our lives, like so many similarities. But my whole thing was, I don't want to have a whole bunch of children with all these different women. Like, I'm going to know where I put my seed. I'm going to be
right.
just the same way. Right. I know where I'm going to put my money for my business. I'm just not going to have a whole bunch of businesses and not know Well, let me take that back. Business-wise, sometimes I do get a little, oh, that's a great idea. Let's throw some money at it. And then I want to forget it. Kind of like my children's books, LondonandSydney.com for Famenky Publishing. You have Craig Stoltz Productions and you do, you know, your stories. Talk about that, because people would say, stay in your lane, Craig. Just stay in your lane.
Yeah, man. No, I can't do that. I can't be put in the box at all. You know, when I studied engineering, then I got my MBA, I still knew that I wanted to do something with the entertainment. And I didn't want anybody to say, why aren't you at an engineering firm? Why are you not talking about business? What is this other thing you're talking about? I'm very aware of how personal branding works. I understand that if I keep drilling in your head that I'm an engineer and that I'm a businessman, it's going to seem like coming out of left field when it comes to entertainment. And so, but I had this calling and I felt like I should do it. And so what I did is I said, what show can I create? Can I put it on YouTube? How many that I could do, you know, dozens and dozens of episodes so that I can rebrand and show people what I really want to do. And I created a show called Style Minute when I talked about men's fashion, you know, what to wear, what not to wear. And I would record 5 episodes in one day. And so I would say, you know, hi, you're watching Style Minute. I'm your host, Craig Stoltz. Welcome back. And hey, welcome back to Style Minute. I'm your host, Craig Stoltz. Let's get started. And I would do 5 different, you know, intros, 5 different outfits, 5 different topics all in one day. Shout out to my guy, John Holland, who, you know, one of the gems that I could drop with y'all is know what you want to do, know what your vision is, and then find somebody who's equally as passionate that can come alongside you to help support you. So me working with John, he had the cameras, the lighting equipment, the editing software, and he was truly the behind the scenes guy that made it all happen. Me, I wanted to be in front of the camera. I had this vision for this show, and you know, and I had the set and everything set up. He would come over to my house, record 5 episodes in one day. And then the next week, I would release one on Monday, one on Tuesday, one on Wednesday, one on Thursday, one on Friday. So coming straight out of the gate, all of a sudden, it's like Craig went from business and engineering to he's on TV 5 days a week. And people were like, man, are you in LA? Are you in New York? I'm like, no, I'm in my living room in Greensboro, North Carolina. And I'm doing what I can do to show you what I really want to do. And so I was able to do about 70 episodes of the show, got picked up on a national speaking tour with United Negro College Fund, traveled around the country doing that, got to be the live lifestyle and men's fashion correspondent for a local news affiliate. And so it was about 700,000 people watching every morning. That led to me being able to pitch TV shows to BET and to other major networks and just kind of understanding how to make a show come to life. And then I took what I learned from that experience to create a show for my daughter called London in America. And she just had natural talent at a young age and we wanted to nurture that. And so Craig Stoltz Productions is largely about seeing what's not being fulfilled in the market, bringing something to light, you know, changing the narrative for me, for my life and how people saw me, the same for my daughter. It gave her a brown face to, you know, she didn't have many people to look up to on YouTube. Hey, dad, I want to watch, you know, videos on YouTube. And I look up and it's nobody that looks like her, nobody that's pouring into her, that's age appropriate. And so I wanted her to be her own role model. And so that's why we created that show. And so I see the vision for Craig Stoltz Productions, just, you know, continuing to put out non-scripted and scripted content in the future, children's books and things like that. At the end of the day, for it all to mean something, though, not just to be entertainment, but for it to mean something and really change lives.
Amen. Amen. And that's what it's about. Just to be seen doesn't mean anything if there's no purpose behind it. You're just doing stuff. And that's, you know, and you've done a lot. I tell my kids, I say, you know, we ain't even working for us anymore. We're working for y'all. Because me and mom, we'll be cool. We'll figure something we could do. And we could just be chilling. But all these other visions and things we're doing in Africa, it is about the whole legacy to hopefully make it easier on y'all, you know. But with that being easy, or things being easier and kids being spoiled, I mean, you know, and I was spoiled. I'm not gonna lie, I was spoiled.
Okay.
But what Where do you see parenting as a business owner and a one family unit? Because we're giving, you know, so many people have preached about it, teached about it. We're giving kids too much. And now we're seeing kids not wanting, not just to leave the house, but want to tell you what to do in your house as a grown 20 something year old person. Like, how do you take your parenting and what you give them and what you don't give them?
Yeah, man. I mean, I look at parenting as, you know, we have an opportunity, we've been blessed with an opportunity. God has saw fit for, has seen fit for me to be the steward of this soul, this spirit, this life. And that, you know, when they think back on their childhood, I will have, me and my wife will have direct influence on what those memories are and what those experiences are and what those soundtracks will, that will be playing in their head will be. We have, I mean, that's a, man, that's such a privilege, it's an honor. It's also challenging. I would say the challenging part is maybe saying, hey, what from my childhood do I want to continue, you know, pushing forward, and what do I need to kind of reprogram? And I think the first thing that I wanted to reprogram was that there could be a healthy mix of being a friend and a parent. And the reason I say that is if I ask somebody to define what a friend is, they'll say it's somebody that holds me accountable, that pushes me to be my best, that I could talk to about anything, that, you know, really sees me for who I really am. They really know me. They really know me. And they won't let me settle for less, right? So I can argue with them, but I'm still going to be their friend. You know what I mean? I can push them to be, you know, successful, and they're still not going to say, you know, I'm pushing them too hard. They're going to say, man, I needed that. I need a friend like that. And I'm asking myself, well, why can't a parent be that? Why? Why can't they? A lot of times parents are fearful because it becomes a do as I say, just do what I tell you to do. Don't ask any questions. And that's not what life should be about. You should be inquisitive. You should challenge. You should ask questions. And you know, at times you should also trust and just take my word for it. But that take your word for it doesn't come without building trust and building the relationship and getting to know each other. And so anyway, so that was the first thing I wanted to reprogram, is how can I have a healthy mix of that? Because when I send my daughter and my son out of the house and they have to be a productive member of society, my parenting roles have to change. I have to let them go. I have to trust that I've given them everything I had while I had them in my house. I've given you everything. And so what it looks like, a lot of it is, hey, let's take a flight. And let's go on an airplane. We'll go on an airplane, and I'll have my daughter. I'll say, we're following you to the gate. You need to navigate through this airport and follow, and we're going to follow you to the gate. You were at a restaurant. You're going to order your food. Hey, I need you to go up to the register and make this payment. All these little small things that build confidence that, hey, you can do this. So even just yesterday, we were putting air in a tire. I'm looking at what's the PSI currently on the tires. Let's look in the door jamb. What does it say? And now let's go put some air in the tire. I mean, these are all like life skills. These are things that have to be taught. These are things that have to be done. So when we're in the restaurant, I may have a meeting with a team member. Might not even be a really positive meeting. It might be something that's a tough conversation. I'll have my daughter sit kind of in a booth behind me so she can hear how I'm having the conversation. She's going to understand that it's not all sunshines. It's not all the free milkshakes and nuggets and waffle fries that you can eat. These are conversations like this that have to happen. And then we'll talk about it. It's like, Dad, that was really good. You know, I saw how you did this and I saw how they reacted. And so what's next? Are you going to have to fire them? And what's next? I'll have her come in there and wipe tables down and clear tables and, you know, clear trays from a guest and make sure that they're good. Even at 12 years old. So she's in the restaurant and I'm watching her. I'm showing her that there's no free meal. Everybody has to earn their keep. And there's a lot of moving parts to make this thing happen. So when we say, and you go to your friends and be like, yo, my dad, my parents, we have a Chick-fil-A. She also can say, I was there cleaning. I was there with these difficult conversations. I was there during this point and this point. And she doesn't just have a one-sided view of what success looks like. If I bring home a check of, you know, $1,000 or $100,000 or $0, she understands how all of that works and what that means. And so for her, it's early exposure, it's context, it's being her friend, it's making sure that we still have our daddy-daughter dates, because at the end of the day, Chick-fil-A can go away, everything can go away. At the end of the day, her and I need to be good. You know, our relationship needs to be good. So it's a mix. I know I'm kind of all over the place a little bit, but it's really a mix of saying, what does she need? What does she need from me? And never losing sight of that and being able to use what I have access to make her even that much better.
And now you were good, because this is the game that I want to share, because we do not hear the majority of, you know, business owners talking about their personal lives. We do similar things at the airport. I have a 12-year-old and a new 9-year-old. We just came back from Europe and we did a, you know, and they have been to Europe before, but it's like, hey, everybody likes to go to the lounge. Show me where the business lounge is, but show me where our train is coming, where that Eurostar, you find it, you know? And so you need that. I tell my kids, I got 78 more of natural years here on this earth, God willing. I plan on having a hologram or whatever technology comes where I can keep, you know, stay in here. Yep. You guys got to know how to navigate this, especially they tell me they're going to have their own homes and, you know, big homes too, in these cities and that city. So, okay, since y'all going to have that, make sure you have your mom and I's room too. Cause we, you know, we need to be there too. I wasn't thinking about that city. Okay. I need to be there. Right. But no, this is the game, because people are not getting it. We're hearing about how, oh, you can make $1,000 a day. Mm-hmm. Like, and you can, no one talks about, and the taxes will be this, you know, and how to keep your family together, because sometimes making whatever you see as money, it might have you get that Michael Jackson and John Travolta cleft chin right there, and you get the angel kiss coming down, and you start acting brand new. And well, you know, I only eat Bulgari, and you really start tripping.
Yeah,
you know, Kanye is going through that right now. Believed his own hype.
Yeah, we gotta pray for that guy, man. Yeah, no, you're right. You're absolutely right. That's easily a trap that can you know, one could fall into. I mean, I think it just highlights who you really are and what really matters to you. And ain't nothing wrong with luxury items and things like that. If you keep it in a healthy perspective that you don't need it, like you have to be. Let's be clear. You just want it. You can find something that's much cheaper, much more affordable. But if you want it, and life is short, you know, we know a lot of people come and go much quicker than they should. And so it's, you know, enjoy life and enjoy it, especially when you're working hard for it. Don't make any apologies for that. But also don't forget where you came from, and don't forget that there's people, you're in a rare space. You're in rare air when you get to a point where you have 85 and plus employees and, you know, multi-million dollar business and things like that. You're in rare air, man. Like, you're not better. You're just, God is just giving you more, and he's expecting you to handle that better, right? And everybody plays a role in this world. And so when I see somebody that's on a street corner, I still see him as a person. I still see him as somebody that somebody gave birth to, that were in somebody's kindergarten class. And now they're here for whatever the reason is. I'm not going to judge you, but I see you as a person. You know what I mean? And if I have access to a sandwich and I can give you a sandwich, I'm going to do it. I'm going to take care of you. I'm never going to lose sight of it. But sometimes you can. I can imagine how easy it is to believe your own hype and think, you know, you're up on a pedestal and everybody's just down there, you know, working for you and working around you, and you're just the man or the woman. To the point that I adopted a inverted pyramid leadership structure. So I'm definitely, so the pyramid is the widest end of the pyramid is my team members. They're the ones that are closest to the guests. And then underneath them are the trainers who support the team members. Underneath the trainers are the team leaders who support the trainers, who support the team members, who are giving our guests a better day. Under there, you have your associate directors, and then me, the little small piece of the triangle. I'm setting the vision, the culture, and then putting the systems in place that allow all the other things to happen. And so when somebody gets promoted, they're actually moving down. They are saying, I have a strong back, I have a strong shoulder, I have what it takes to take on more weight, more pressure, and I can support those above me. I'm not moving up, taking things off and telling y'all what to do. I'm moving down and asking, how can I serve? How can I support? How can I be there? And so I think it creates that humility that says, the more your title changes, the more money you're making, you're actually supporting more people. You're not doing necessarily less. You're not better. You're actually just supporting those who are actually doing the real work.
I love it. I heard it taught, and I use it often, that that pyramid that we think, we turn it upside down. Yep. And so if you're at top, now you're at the bottom, because mm-hmm. now, you know, heavy is the head that has to wear yeah. that crown. And I just have to put it out there. Sometimes I can hear the haters. No, you guys, I am not talking to Maya's from Girlfriends. Boyfriend, this is not Khalil Khan. I know we were talking entertainment, but I'm sure you've heard that before, of the reference. Yeah. You know, so but you don't do any stunt work for
no. This okay. is just me. This, you know, maybe one day.
Okay. I wife might be like, hold on, stunt work. So you trying to, I know when I got on my first real bull, my wife was like, you got good insurance. So
yeah, you better than me, man. You're better than me. Yeah. That's wild.
Yeah. Man, you guys look up Killing Cash Cowboy on YouTube, man. The footage, you know, just go to the end, because it was a lot of wahala.
I'm definitely going to search for it. Yep.
Yeah. Tell the people, you know, I know you do a lot with the youth. Mm-hmm. Tell the people where they can connect if there's a book that's coming out, or any type of courses or anything that you have, because people need the game. They say, well, how do I tap in more? You know, it's kind of like everybody wants you to be their mentor, their daddy. But
yeah.
This is why books are written, and you guys should grab them when they come out.
Yeah, man. You know, I have asked, I mean, a lot of people have asked for, hey, can you do a webinar? Can you do something to bring everybody together? And you're making me think like, I really have to do something, because the greatest asset we have really is our information. And a lot of times we don't get that information unless we live it ourselves, or unless we learn it from somebody else. And so I would just say, connect with me on Instagram at Craig Stokes, Facebook at Craig Stokes everywhere. And then once I announce it, I want you to just to be connected so we can have these conversations. And then at that time, I want to be able to answer your questions and just hopefully, you know, be a launching pad for whatever it is that you want to achieve. But just at Craig Stokes everywhere, and just stay tuned.
And I wasn't going to ask this question, but if I don't ask it, I can see these people asking. And I'm going to tell you guys, do a Google search. To get a Chick-fil-A is a lot cheaper than getting a McDonald's. Mm-hmm. But can you talk about, okay, if you need 10,000, if you need that, all in, what do people really should be ready to invest in their own money? Because I don't want that to be the question over and over. How much? Because this is Googleable information. Yeah. But then you think about the sweat equity. You think about the things you weren't prepared for. Somebody, you know, whatever that may be. All in, how much would you say safely for someone to get into Chick-fil-A franchise mm-hmm. that they would need of their own cash?
Very good question. $10,000 is the franchise fee. I mean, you got to think about the fact that it is a business, right? So there's a chance that you could open up a business or a Chick-fil-A, and maybe you're not profitable right away, or not as profitable as you thought you would be, meaning what you're making every month and taking home. And so you want to have enough money saved up. I know Chick-fil-A definitely doesn't have a dollar amount, but they do want to know that you have enough money saved up so that, let's say you go 6 months or longer without making a dollar, just the worst case scenario. Do you have enough money to pay your bills, live a comfortable lifestyle so that your family's not put out because you're waiting to make a dollar, or that you're not so stressed out about like, man, I can't do this. I got to let this thing go. Do you have enough money saved up? I guess that money all depends on where you live in the country. If you're in California, and you're paying $3,000 a month for rent, you know, I would say safely 70 something thousand dollars, you know, if not more, because you're talking about that's 36,000, or let's call it was so 18, $20,000 for 6 months just for rent, right? And then are your kids in daycare? Are you paying gas? Are you paying electric, obviously electric bill, you know, all of those things. What do you need comfortably to where $10,000 aside, you can live comfortably until your business is profitable enough? So that's what I would say from that standpoint. From a sweat equity standpoint, just expect to spend, you know, 12, 15 hour days and 60 to 80 hour work weeks in the beginning, because people always say like, oh man, how are Chick-fil-A's all pretty consistently in terms of how they treat their guests and just the pace of the drive through and this and that. it doesn't magically happen. Like, you actually have to be there. You have to invest that time up front to make sure your culture is right, that you hire the right people, that they understand what your vision is and what your expectations are, that people are trained, that you develop a leadership team. So, oh, this person actually is really good. They're catching on really fast and they communicate really well and people like them. Maybe they can be a trainer. Maybe they can then be a team leader. And you have to really move people around and develop job descriptions for that person and what their role is. And it's a lot. It's a lot. And you have to manage the two biggest costs in the business, which are labor and food. And if you can manage those well, and then everything else in between, you can make a decent living. But sweat equity does matter. It does count. It's what Chick-fil-A is looking for. And you also, I would say, probably after the first 3 to 6 months, you could probably start doing a fewer hours in the restaurant because you have a team set up, a team that's in place. But it is the fast food, quick service restaurant industry. So people there, you know, there can be high turnover. And so you might feel like you're kind of starting, you have good seasons where you're doing really well. And then you're back to hiring again and training again. And then you're back up to everything's running smooth. And it's kind of cyclical in that way. But I know your initial question was about the money, but the sweat equity part can't be overlooked. Can't be downplayed at all.
Especially in a fast food, all pun intended, world where somebody I could see right now, you guys, congratulations. You started this business during a pandemic and you're still in business. Mm-hmm. That's a great thing. And you're not open on Sundays, right? But there's people who in that same time, legally or illegally, got a whole full PPP loan, bought some cars, but they would look, why would they look at you and say, hey, you open that business, I got this PPP, or I'm a Shiba coin trillionaire. Mm-hmm. Can I pay you to open my own business? You run it. And I just don't think there's an amount of money in the world that somebody who doesn't want to work that business, that you would take their money, because it's always going to be some sweat equity. It's always going to be something that you're like, hold on, you're going to pay me how much? You like, is there an amount? I could be wrong, but is there an amount of money if someone says, I need you to open mine up, but I don't want to be in the business?
No, you wouldn't get selected. So the thing is that the $10,000 in the money that you need, that's actually the easy part. The hard part is just getting selected. What I would tell you is, for everyone listening and for you, is, one of the main questions that you're going to get asked is through your interview process is, tell me your story. Tell me your story. What's the answer to that question, right? And unlike most job interviews or business opportunities, you're not going to just jump into, well, I went to college here, or I'm from here, I went to college there, I got this degree, and here I am. I was born here, you know, parents got divorced, best friend got killed, you know, I was successful. I created this business. Da, 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 da. I tried to do this. It failed, but I was able to kind of weather that storm. And then this was the outcome. Essentially, they're looking for a pattern of, have you overcome adversity? Do you have that entrepreneurial spirit? Do you have that chemistry, that character, that competency that we're looking for? And if you do, then maybe you're the right person that we want to partner with. Now we have to now figure out where in the world, where in the country are you going to be best fit for in terms of location. So are you the right person, and where should your store be? And so that's the hardest part. I think my year that I got selected, it was 70,000 people got selected. And I mean, 70,000 people applied and only about 110 people got selected. And so that number has continued to grow, maybe well over six figures in terms of the number of applicants that are received every year. So the hardest part is that. So what I would say is for people to just take time, pause for a second, reflect on your life. What is that thing, that experience that you have overlooked, or you just kind of downplayed because it's your life, you've lived it, doesn't seem that special. But if you had to articulate that and express that to somebody who didn't live it, how would you put it into words? You know, how would you talk about the thing that you faced and what your end result was? And if you can string enough patterns like that together, opportunities will come your way, because it's like, they even told me, they said, Craig, if you think that we're giving you this restaurant because we think you know what you're doing, or because you had a restaurant before, you're wrong. We know you don't know what you're doing, but we believe that you have what it takes to figure it out. And that's really the magic with anything in life. I wasn't a parent. You weren't a parent. until you were a parent, right? You didn't have experience being a parent until you were a parent. I didn't have experience owning a restaurant until I owned a restaurant. And so learning on the job and taking from life things that I've experienced and trying to make it make sense and figure it out and being resourceful and asking questions and leaning on my wife and those around me. And here we are now, almost 3 years later, weathering the pandemic, and, you know, making our home here in LA. So I would just say, go ahead.
But now that you are a parent and now that you have a successful thing, that's when people want to put their kids on you. Can you babysit? Can you take kids? So is there an amount of money for those who say, I do want to invest in you, Craig, when you open that second one? How much money do I need to give you? Is that even an option for
somebody? Yeah. And I'm sorry, I didn't answer that the first time, but no, there's no option. So with Chick-fil-A, you have to own the location 100%. So my LLC is Feed the Dream. I'm the 100% owner of the restaurant and the LLC. So it really wouldn't matter. I mean, people have definitely showed up in the drive-thru and they said, yo, it's only $10,000. They're like, look right here. They pulled out a duffel bag, showed me $100,000 in cash, literally, no lie, stacks. And I'm like, y'all want 10 of these. It just doesn't happen like that. And no, there's no amount of money because it's not even possible for me to do it. But let's just say in another world where it was possible, I think that, my mindset would be I have to have equity. I would have to be, you couldn't just pay me to run your thing. We'd have to partner up.
Okay. So Shug has already come through right before he went in, or maybe he was on a weekend thing, try to bring money. Cause you know, somebody creative would be like, well, okay, you own 100% of that, but you and I are going to own another company. Mm-hmm. And then that money is going to, you know, and people mm-hmm. start getting creative like that. And that's part of business. Yeah. But you know, when Craig writes his book and if he puts it out there and or maybe he creates a venture fund, then you support that, you know, because then that trickles down to everything else that he has. Because a lot of times when we create like a venture fund or something, people start, well, what do you mean? I'm going to give you some money and you're going to go invest it. Like, hold on, you wanted to be part of my world, my metaverse. Here's an opportunity. So you guys, he gave you the game. I don't want him to share too much because when he has his next show, I want to save something for them. I also, when he writes his book and any courses or anything he gives, I could do this all day because I love the story. I see the movie. I see it like the lights, whatnot. And when he expands to Africa, I want to be the first call. Like, Kellen, we're ready for Africa because they are taking our systems and making them win in a beautiful way out there. 54 countries you guys got in counting. So make sure. Yeah. Craig, you told them where to find you. You guys have been blessed by the game. I want you to make sure you check the links in the description so you can connect with Craig and make sure you share the game. It will change someone's life. Be blessed.
Are you tired of the violence? Tired of the injustice? Police brutality, rampant discrimination, lack of gun control in this failed bias socioeconomic experiment called America? Or maybe you need a break from the relentless grind and want to regain control of your destiny, your wealth, your health, and your purpose. DiversifiedGame.com has the right course for you. Prepare for my first trip to Africa. Looking to reconnect with your roots, start a new business, or just a fresh start. Africa, aka the motherland, is waiting. Don't let the Chinese and the Mzungus have the fun and also take over the motherland. From Cairo to Mombasa, from Dakar to Cape Town, Africa has something for everyone, from business opportunities to the most amazing people, safety, leisure, and landscapes. The opportunities abound. It is time for the diaspora to reconnect with their roots. Time to reconnect with the birthplace of humanity. Africa is the last frontier. Get your head in the game and reclaim your legacy. The writing is on the wall. Babylon is falling. Give up the stress, grind, and violence inflicted on our people on this continent and prepare for a journey of restoration and joy by connecting with the land of your ancestors. Check out our new course and kick off your adventure at diversifiedgame.com.